Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is September the 2nd. We are continuing in Shoyasar in Zechariah. We are up to Perek Yud Af, that is chapter 11. Psach Levanon de la Secha Levanon, open your doors, Vesochal Ish Ba'arazecha, and fire should consume your cedar. The Gemara tells us in Meseches Yuma that this Pasuk is referring to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, even though the Gemara in Yuma is talking about the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, and Zechariah lives in the time of the construction of that Beis HaMikdash. So this Nevuah would be something which would not take place for another 420 years. But that is what it is about. The truth is that the Gemara tells us this Nevuah actually takes place 40 years prior to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara tells us that 40 years prior, the Kohanim would lock the gates of the Beis HaMikdash before leaving for the night, which is what they were supposed to do. There would be guards around the Beis HaMikdash, and when they would return in the morning, the gates would be wide open. They would open on their own. And that is a reference, that's referenced here in this pasuk, Psach Levanon de la Secha, the Levanon, which refers to the Beis HaMikdash. The reason why the word Levanon refers to the Beis HaMikdash, there are several reasons given in the Medrash. One of the reasons is, it comes from the word Lavan, white, because through the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash is Mislabein Avonoseim Shal Yisrael, it whitens the sins of the Jews. So the Zechariah here says that if the Jews are not deserving of having a Beis HaMikdash, then the Levanon should open its gates, its doors, and the fire shall consume its cedar, that eventually it will be burned down. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, when this was going on for a while, the Gemara says that it went on until Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai yelled at the gates and said, "Why do you continue to cause fear? Well, I know you're going to be destroyed. I know the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed, but there's no reason why you have to keep opening and causing greater fear." Pasuk Beis, verse 2, Halel Birosh Ki Nafal Erez. Halel here does not mean, it does not derive from the word Hallel, to praise. Rather, Halel is also a language, in, spelled this way and with these vowels, is a language of groaning or wailing, like Alalai or woe is to me, like Oy Vey, that kind of thing. Halel Birosh Ki Nafal Erez. The Birosh, which is a small bush, should wail or should groan because the Erez, the cedar, has fallen. Asher Adirim Shudadu, that the strong ones have been taken captive. Halilu Alone Vashan, the big trees of Bashan should, again, wail. Ki Yarad Yar Habatsir, because the great forest of the fortification has fallen. So the pasuk means to say that the smaller ones should wail and be afraid and lament because the great ones have fallen. So that as the tzaddikim and the leadership of the Jewish people were taken away or killed, then the others had reason to wail and to be afraid. Kol Yelilas Haroim, the sound of the wailing of the shepherds. The shepherds here would be the kings. Ki Shudida Adartam, because their Adaris, which is another word for their glory, has been taken away, has been taken captive. Kol Sha'agas Kefirim, the sound of the roaring of lions. Now here, roaring means also a language of wailing, that they cry out. The lions would also be the leaders of the people. Kishudad Gaon HaYarden, because it has been taken captive, the grandeur of the Yarden. The Yarden was historically a very fertile place. Today the Yarden is a very narrow waterway. It at one time was a wide river and very, very fertile. And therefore the Yarden was a place where they would grow things, and they would also shepherd. They would have grazing land there. Now it has been taken captive. The area has been taken over. Kama Hashem Elokai, so says Hashem, my God. Re'ei Esona Harega, shepherd the sheep of the slaughter. You should shepherd the sheep of the slaughter. In other words, you should prepare for them shepherds. You should say a prophecy about the leadership of the sheep that is to be killed. That is us Jews, of course, that the shepherds themselves either were unable to lead us or actually stabbed us in the back and didn't help us. Pasuk Hey, verse 5, Asher konehen yahargun v'lo yashamu, that their leaders will kill them and they will not have any remorse. Now, this is not referring to the Jewish leaders killing them, but that the leaders of the non-Jews who conquered us would kill them and have no remorse. Umochrehen yomar, and those who would sell them into slavery would say, Baruch Hashem Vashir. They would say, Baruch Hashem. They would say, blessed is Hashem, that look, that he gave them over into my hands, and through that I can become wealthy. So they're actually going to thank God, thank Hashem for giving us into their hands. Lo yachmol aleihem, they will have no mercy on them. Why is all this happening? It says Hashem, ki lo echmol od al yoshvei haaretz, nu Hashem, because I will no longer have mercy on those who dwell in the land, says Hashem. V'hinei anochi mamtzi es ha'adam ish biyad re'ehu uviyad malko, and I am going to pit one man against his friend and against his king. There's going to be internal strife. V'chitesu es ha'aretz, they will cut down the land. V'lo atzil mi'adam, and I will not save from their hands. There's going to be internal strife, external attack, and I'm not going to stop it. So that's what Hashem says to Zechariah to speak about. So Yechezkel says, I said a prophecy regarding the shepherding of the sheep that would be killed. Lachin aniyeh hatzon, regarding the impoverished of the sheep. Vo'ekach li shnei maklos. So Hashem says, I took for myself two staffs. This would be two different leaders. La'achad karasi Noam, u'la'achad karasi Chovlim. One I called Noam. Noam means pleasant. And one I called Chovlim. Chovlim means those who afflict. One is pleasant, one causes afflictions. Vo'ereas atzon, and I shepherded the sheep. What is this reference to two staffs? One which is called pleasant, and one which is called chovlim, that which strikes or afflicts. So there are two different ways that the Gemara and the Medrash address this. One way is that this pasuk is going back to the first Beis HaMikdash, and is saying that after the death of Shlomo HaMelech, then the kingdom was split into two, as we all are well aware. One staff, which is one king, I called pleasant. The other staff, the other king, I called that which causes afflictions. The king of Yehuda, who would be the direct descendant of David HaMelech, is called Noam, is called pleasant. He rules in Yerushalayim and rules, referring to the two kings when the split happened, the two kings were the son of Shlomo, who was Rechavam, and then there was the king of Yisrael, who was Yeravam ben Nevat. Now, at that time, we learned this when we learned Sefer Melachim, that Rechavam, he felt that the people should pay tribute and be taxed in a very intense way, because he dealt with the people as if they were still being ruled by Shlomo HaMelech when there was incredible prosperity. However, that prosperity had waned in the days of Rechavam, and when he tried to tax the people, there was a rebellion. And he tried to rule with an iron fist, and it was thrown back in his face, and the kingdom split. Whereas Yeravam ben Nevat ruled pleasantly, and 10 of the 12 tribes followed Yeravam ben Nevat. So those are the two staffs, one called Noam, the pleasant one would be Yeravam ben Nevat of the northern kingdom, and then the strong one, or the one that afflicted people, referring to Rechavam in the southern kingdom. That's one way of saying it. But the Gemara also says a fascinating thing. The Gemara says that we find that in the second Beis HaMikdash, we did not have kings. We had Kohanim, who ran the Beis HaMikdash. The Kohen Gadol was a powerful figure in the second Beis HaMikdash. And we always have Torah. Today, we have neither the leadership of kings nor the leadership of the Kohuna. We have Kohanim, but we don't have the leadership of the Kohanim because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. And the only leadership we really have is that of Torah. The leadership of Torah, which became the most powerful force in Klal Yisrael during the second Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash was built, we were led by the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, which was essentially a body of Talmidei Chacham of Torah scholars, and that endured the leadership of the Torah scholars. That leadership of the Torah scholars, the seat of governance of Torah, split into two camps. Not that they were warring with each other, but they were in two different places. One in Eretz Yisrael, where the Beis HaMikdash was located, and the other was in Bavel. As you know, many, 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 many people remained in Bavel, did not come back for the second Beis HaMikdash. The Yishuv in Bavel, the Jewish community in Bavel, lasted from the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash all the way until modern times. An incredible length of time where there was a Jewish settlement in Bavel, which is present-day Iraq. This led to two schools of Torah. There was exchange between the two. There was traveling between the two. The Gemara frequently tells us, Ki asa Rav Dimi. When Rav Dimi came, he said such and such. Rav Dimi was one of those who traveled, and when he came, the Gemara that we typically study is Talmud Bavli, which is the Babylonian Gemara, which means it's the Gemara that was redacted in Bavel. The Gemara Talmud Bavli includes much discussion that took place in Eretz Yisrael. It is not exclusively a Gemara about the Talmidei Chacham of Bavel, but it was compiled and redacted in Bavel. Ki asa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, he reported to us, this is what Rav Yochanan said. Rav Yochanan lived in Eretz Yisrael. This is what he reported. Things of that nature are found throughout Talmud Bavli. We also have Talmud Yerushalmi. Talmud Yerushalmi was redacted in Eretz Yisrael. Both are written in Aramis. They're both written in Aramaic, but they are of a different dialect of Aramis. And the typical Ben Torah, the person who learns in yeshiva, learned in yeshiva, is much more familiar with the Aramis dialect of Talmud Bavli rather than of the Yerushalmi, because that's the one that is typically studied. The reasons for that are described in the Gemara, why the Talmud Bavli is the one that we focus on rather than the Talmud Yerushalmi. But without getting into the specific issues of the different natures of the two Gemaras, but the Talmud Bavli was far more developed because the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael came to an end, or at least the intense scholarship came to an end long before the Yishuv in Bavel. The Yishuv in Bavel had many more years, centuries actually, than the one in Eretz Yisrael. And so the Talmud Bavli, therefore, is much more developed. There's much more there, more generations of Talmidei Chachamim, quoting both what happened in Bavel and in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the Talmud Bavli is the Talmud of choice that is learned throughout all the yeshivas. Not that the Yerushalmi is not studied, but it is not focused on the way the Bavli is. Nevertheless, even though there is an exchange of ideas, and the Talmidei Chacham did speak to each other, and it's not like you have one school of thought in one place, the other school of thought in the other place, but you have two areas where Torah is intensely learned, and they're very, very distant from each other. In their day, traveling was not easy, and it took it took much time to travel. You didn't have instant communication. You couldn't call, you couldn't email, you couldn't text. There was no way of having that kind of exchange. And therefore, although there was interest in discussing issues with each other, but they were very, very distant, and therefore two approaches or two schools developed. The Gemara tells us that the Talmud, the Yerushalmi, those Talmidei Chachamim in Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael would be called Noam, as their interchange with each other is of a much more pleasant nature. Whereas the Talmud Bavli would be called Chovlim, it's of a more sharp nature. The exchange is sometimes sharp between the Talmidei Chachamim. Sometimes the words that are used are sharp. I don't mean to say that they are biting, or that they're cruel or mean, but they are sharp. They're not in the Gemara. Rarely is the effort put in to soften the blow when one Talmud Chacham is coming to refute what the other one said. Rarely is it peppered with some sort of a soft preamble, or some kind of boom. You know, what you're saying is not correct, because da 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 da. It's a very, very sharp back and forth. So therefore, Talmud Bavli is referred to as Chovlim, as the one that is with affliction. In other words, it's striking each other. Whereas the Talmud Yerushalmi is called Noam, is pleasant. Lest you think it's a bad thing that they had that type of exchange, the Gemara tells us that there is milchamta shel Torah. There's the war of Torah, which is considered to be a good thing. Obviously within reason and within certain boundaries, but the idea of two Talmidei Chachamim going at it is an age-old process that goes on today as well. But the fact is that developing situation is also being referred to here by Zechariah, that Hashem says, I set up two different camps that in the process of the Golus, two camps developed. No matter what, it's difficult to say the two camps is a good thing, even if it was handled well, but the fact is that two is still two and not one. It's not one big happy family. Clearly, the way that Hashem envisions the goal of the world is that we are functioning as one unit rather than a separate unit like that. So that this nevuah also refers to splitting of two different schools of Torah. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Va'achid es shloshes haroim b'yerach echad. And I took away the three shepherds in one month. Va'tiksar nafshi bahem, and my soul became annoyed is too strong of a word. I became unhappy with him, I guess. V'gam nafsham bochala vi, and also their souls were just becoming. Bochala means to become large or big, but here it's not in a positive way. It means that there was a sense of not just being too much, says Hashem, so to speak, too much for me. The Gemara says, what does it mean that the three shepherds were removed in 1 month? It says the Gemara, this is referring to the three great shepherds that we had in the Midbar, in the wilderness. They would be Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. The Gemara asks, what do you mean they were taken away in 1 month? That's not so. Miriam died, they all died in the last year, but Miriam died in Nisan, Aaron died in Av, and Moshe Rabbeinu died in Adar. And so they were not in the same month. Says the Gemara, however, as you all know, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Mun was in the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu, the water, the Be'er, was in the merit of Miriam, and the Anane Kavod, the clouds of glory, were in the merit of Aaron. When Miriam died, she was the first to die, the water disappeared. But then it came back in the merit of Moshe and Aaron. When Aaron died, the water disappeared I don't remember if the Gemara says the water disappeared again, but the clouds certainly disappeared. And then all three, the clouds came back, and all three were in the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu. When he died on the 7th of Adar, all three disappeared for good. So it was as if they all disappeared in the same month. They all died in the same month. Because even though Miriam died in Nisan, but her legacy remained because the well was still there. When Aaron died in Av, his legacy remained because the clouds were still there. But when Moshe Rabbeinu died, all three legacies were removed as if it was in one day. And so it's as if they all died at one time. Now, even though their deaths has nothing to do with the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash nor the second Beis HaMikdash, however, it is a reference to Hashem taking away leadership in one fell swoop. And as that happened in the time of the Midbar, Baruch Hashem, at that time we had Yehoshua to lead us, but it does repeat itself that when things are bad, then we suddenly, chas v'shalom, lose leadership, and we lose them sometimes in groups, and it's a very, very big blow. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Va'omar, and I said, lo ere eschem. Hashem says, I will not shepherd you. Ha'mesa samus. Those who will die will die. Va'nichedas tikached, and those who are lost will be lost. Vanisharos, and those who remain, tochalna ishas besaru usa, each woman will consume the flesh of her friend. This does not have to be literal, as in eating, but it can also mean infighting and strife. Voikachas maklias noam, I took my staff, Noam, the pleasant one, voegdaoso, and I broke it. As we know, the northern kingdom, which is the pleasant one, that one goes first. That one goes into Golas first. Lehaferes brisi, to nullify my covenant ashakarati es kol amim, that I made with the non-Jews. The Medrash tells us there was a covenant that Hashem made with the non-Jews. I do not know the nature of this covenant, meaning I don't know how it was made, but it was a covenant that the non-Jews would not attack or would not be able to hurt us Jews, that they would be kept at bay. And Hashem had the 10 tribes taken into Golus as a punishment to us, and that nullified the bris, the covenant that had been with the non-Jews. Vatufar bayomahu, it was nullified on that day. Vayedu chen anie hatzon hashomer osi, and it was then known anie hatzon, the impoverished of the flock, hashomrim osi, I believe the way you read this is that those who had protected me were now no longer there. I think that's the way to understand that. Ki dvar Hashem hu, that this is the word of Hashem. Let me just check that one. Hashomer mosi means those that protected me. No, so Rashi says like this. Those impoverished of the sheep who were those who, so to speak, guarded me, says Hashem. In other words, the tzaddikim, those who did do what I said, they then understood this was all coming from me. That this was not, this was, because since that covenant was now nullified, they understood this was coming from me, from Hashem, that this destruction was going to happen. Va'omar aleihem, I said to them, im tov be'ineichem, if this is good in your eyes, in other words, if you want things to be good, havu sechari, then give me my wages. In other words, keep the mitzvos, if you want things to be good. V'im lo, if you don't want things to be good, chadolu, then hold back, don't do the mitzvos. Vayishkelu es schari shloshim kasef, they took my wages, 30 kasef, meaning they did not keep the mitzvos, and so therefore the destruction happens. Why 30 kasef? We'll get back to this presently. Vayomar Hashem Eli, Hashem said to me, Hashlicheu el hayotzer, throw it, meaning throw the 30 kasef, into the treasury, eder hayakar, the glory is gone, asher yakarti me'aleim, I've taken the glory from them, I took the 30 coins. Vashlicho so, and I threw it based Hashem to the house of Hashem el hayotzer to the treasury. Earlier in Treyasar, back in Hosea, way back in Hosea, the pasuk tells us. In Perek Gimel of Hosea, chapter 3, Pasuk Beis, verse 2, the Pasuk tells us that, it says, Vo'ekreha li, and I dug for me, or I piled up for me, excuse me, Bachamisha asar kasef, for 15 kasef, V'chomer sorim, and a chomer of barley, v'lesach sa'orim, and a lesach of barley. Chomer and lesach, chomer is 30 kor, a kor is a very large measurement, it's 30 kor, a lesach is 15 kor, it's 45 kor altogether. Shem says, I piled for me with 15 coins, 45 sa'orim. The Gemara tells us that this 45 sa'orim, this 45 barley, refers to 45 tzaddikim that exist in every generation. Now, we are often familiar with the phrase lamed vav tzaddikim, 36 tzaddikim. There is another Gemara that speaks about 36 tzaddikim in every generation. But there's also a Gemara that says 45 tzaddikim in every generation. The Gemara says they are divided up in two groups, 30 and 15. One group is in Eretz Yisrael, one group is in Bava, which means outside Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara tells us which one is in Eretz Yisrael, which one is out of Eretz Yisrael. Says the Gemara, based on this Pasuk Yud Gimel here, 13 in Zechariah, that it says, I took the 30 and I threw them into the house of Hashem, to the treasury, that it is therefore the 30 are in Eretz Yisrael and the 15 are out of Eretz Yisrael. That's how the Gemara says it. But this 30 kesef, this 30 coins, has other references as well. The Gemara tells us that it is also referring to the 30 tzaddikim of the non-Jews, that they had 30 tzaddikim, that because of those 30 tzaddikim, they were sustained. That would be another explanation, that at the time when they were given power in the destruction of the Batei Mikdashos, of the Beis HaMikdash, then there were 30 tzaddikim that would have given them merit to be able to have power. But the Gemara says something else. The Gemara says This refers to the 30 mitzvos, that were accepted by the non-Jews. Now Rashi says in the Gemara that we don't know what these 30 are, because we of course know that there are 7 mitzvos b'nei Noach, but evidently they accepted other things as well. It's possible that 30 are the details of the 7. In other words, each of the 7 has various applications and you could split them up into smaller subgroups. Either way, whatever that 30 is, it is some merit that the non-Jews had because they kept certain mitzvos. Says the Gemara, even though the Pasuk tells us that there were 30 mitzvos that they kept and that they had merit for, however, today they do not keep them except for 3. There are only 3 that they keep at the time of the Gemara. One is that they do not sell the flesh of people in the market. That the flesh of people is still considered to be something which is not a commodity and is therefore should be buried, but it is not sold in the market. That is one of the 3 mitzvos that they still keep. I'm trying to remember now the second. The third is very, very important to hear. Again, one is that they do not sell the flesh of people in the market. One is one has to do with us, that they don't... Can't remember what that one is. I'll have to look that up. But the last one is they do not write a ksuba. They do not write a marriage document for men. Meaning, even though they do not keep the law of immorality between two men, and they break that rule, that law, but they do not write a ksuba. They don't consider it to be a marriage between two men, even if they violate the law, but they don't take it to the extent of considering it to be a marriage. That is the third that they still keep in the time of the Gemara. It is it is very disheartening that in our day we see a breaking down even of that. Pasuk Yud Dalet, verse 14. Voegda es makli hasheni, and I broke my second staff, es hachovlim, the one of the afflicting one. That's going to be the southern kingdom, that of the of Malchus based David. Bahafer es haachava, to break the brotherhood bein Yehuda uvein Yisrael, between Yehuda and between Yisrael. So that was also when the rest of us went into Golus, that was also breaking the staff. Now, we said before that these two staffs also refer to the two schools of learning in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel. And even though you can't point to a specific going into Golus as you can with the Northern Kingdom and the Southern Kingdom, but this clearly also foretells a certain breaking of these schools, both in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel, that although they were very, very successful, the Talmidei Chachamim learned a great deal and created great things, but at the end of the day, there is a breaking there as well. Pasuk Tes Vav, verse 15. Vayomer Hashem Eli, Hashem said to me, Od kach lecha kli roe evili. Also, take for yourself the utensil of the foolish shepherd, the utensil of the foolish shepherd. Because I am now going to establish a shepherd in the land. This is the foolish shepherd. Hani chados lo yifkod, those who are lost will not be remembered. Hanar lo yivakesh, the lad will not seek out. Fanish beres lo yirapei, those that are broken will not be healed. Hanitzva lo yechalkel, hanitzava lo yechalkel, those that are there will not be sustained. Uvisar habria yochal, and the flesh of the healthy sheep he will eat. Ufar sehen yefarek, and their feet or their footsteps, their legs, they will come apart. This is a very, very poor shepherd, a shepherd doing a very, very bad job. What shepherd is this? Says the Gemara, this refers to the current Golos that we're in, that of Malchus Edom. That Edom, when they become the shepherds, they do a very, very poor job, and there is incredible neglect of the sheep. The shepherds themselves are focused completely on their own pleasures and their own needs or whatever they want, and the people are forsaken. Hoi roi ha'elil oz ve'hatzon. Woe is to those who are the foolish shepherds, those who forsake the sheep. Woe to Edom. Now we're finally going to have a pasuk that will actually be somewhat of a consolation. Cherev al zero'o, the sword on his arm, v'al ein yamino, and on his right, and towards his right, meaning his right field of vision, zro'o yavosh tivash, in his right eye, zro'o yavosh tivash, his arm will dry up, v'ein yamino kahu siche, and his right eye will become weak, weak of vision. So in the end, Hashem says, I will punish Edom, and there will be retribution. The Gemara tells us this pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, however, although it is referring to Edom, does have a reference to an incident with us Jews. And the incident is as follows. After the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, we know that the Romans were very cruel and particularly punished those who taught Torah, and it was a very, very difficult time. In the days of Rabbi Akiva, there was a person who, amongst the Jewish people, who was a very, very powerful warrior, who managed to lead a rebellion against the Romans. And this person is what the Gemara calls Bar Koziva, known as Bar Kochva. Bar Koziva. Koziva means false or of a lie. Because he led people to believe that he was Melech HaMashiach, that he was the Mashiach, but of course he was not. He was very, very powerful, Bar Kochva, Bar Koziva. He was very powerful. The Gemara tells us that when the Romans would catapult large boulders over the wall of Beitar was the seat of his power, when they would catapult these large boulders, he would catch them and he would throw them back at the Romans, killing many, many Romans each time. Bar Koziva was a very, very powerful person. The Gemara tells us when Rabbi Akiva himself saw Bar Koziva, he was convinced that he was the Mashiach. But Bar Kochva was not. And he was, in the end, a lie. He mounted this rebellion for 3.5 years, which is quite an accomplishment against the Romans, the most powerful nation in the world. But in the end, he was destroyed. The Gemara tells us, though, that Bar Kochva, Bar Koziva, was not winning for 3.5 years because of his own merit. He was winning because in Beitar, there was a great Talmud Chacham by the name of Rabbi Lazar Hamodai. Rabbi Lazar Hamodai fasted, davened. It says he was lying in ashes and in the dirt, and he davened every day, and he said, Hashem, please do not destroy the Jewish people. Don't be angry with us. And every single day he davened, and he was moving the needle of the Midas Harachamim, of Hashem's merit, Hashem's attribute of mercy, that the Jews might have been saved. The Caesar was unable to defeat Betar because of Bar Kozima, because of Bar Kochva and his army. Bar Kochva had an army, the Gemara says, of 400,000 strong soldiers that were protecting Betar. But the Gemara says that a Kusi, somebody who was out to get the Jews, he himself might have been Jewish, but he was out to betray us, he told the Caesar, you're not going to be able to win as long as the Jews have someone davening to Hashem. Let me take care of this. The Medrash says he snuck into the city using the gutter system, the sewer system. That's how he got into the city. And when he got in, he looked around to find who was davening. And he came to a shul, and he found Rav Elazar HaModai davening. And he decided that he was going to end this. Now, he was recognized as a spy. He was not from the city. He was clearly an outsider. And he may have allowed himself to be recognized as a spy. And before they had a chance to catch him, he went over to Rav Elazar HaModai, and while Rav Elazar HaModai was davening, and he whispered in his ear. Rav Elazar HaModai was davening, totally concentrating on Hashem. Rav Elazar HaModai did not even notice what had happened. They schlepped this kusi before Bar Kochva, and he said to him, what did you say to Rav Elazar HaModai? So, because he was afraid that perhaps they were plotting some sort of a rebellion. So the Kusi said, If I tell you, then my king, meaning the Caesar, will kill me. If I don't tell you, then you will kill me. So I'm really stuck either way. Better I shouldn't tell and you'll kill me. That's the better thing for me to do, rather than to give away the secrets of the Caesar. So they couldn't get anything out of him. So Bar Kochva therefore said, send for Rav Elazar HaModai. Let's hear what he said to him. So when Rav Elazar HaModai finished davening, they brought him before Bar Kochva. Bar Kochva said, what did this Kusi whisper in your ear? And Bar Kochva said, I don't know anything about it. I didn't hear anything. I was davening. I don't know anything about it. That seemed suspicious to Bar Kochva, that here this Kusi clearly said something to Rav Elazar HaModai, and the Kusi doesn't want to divulge what it is, and Rav Elazar HaModai is clearly trying to not say anything, and he got so angry that he struck Rav Elazar HaModai and killed him. And the Gemara says that was the end of Bar Kochva. When that happened, then Hashem, that caused a din, it caused a judgment against Bar Kochva, and Hashem therefore examined all of the sins that were going on, and then his army was killed, he was killed, the city was razed, everything was destroyed, and Betar was completely decimated by the Romans. The Gemara says that when this happened, the Romans killed everybody and made a rule that the bodies may not be buried, that they just have to sit in the sun for months and not be buried. And that would be a lesson to everybody of what happens to those who rebel against the Romans. A nes happened and the bodies did not rot. They remained as is, and they were able to be buried later. And this is where the fourth bracha of benching comes from. The bracha of Hatov v'hametiv, that bracha was established because of the Haruge Betar, those in Betar who were killed, who were destroyed, that their bodies did not rot, and they were able to be buried a real burial. However, it did mark the end of the rebellion of Bar Kokhba. And the Gemara says this pasuk, the Medrash says this pasuk, pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17 in Zechariah, is a reference to this sad story. Hoi roi ha'elil oz ve'hatzon, woe to the shepherd, the foolish shepherd, referring to Bar Kokhba, the one who forsakes the sheep. Cherev al zero'o, a sword against his arm, v'al ein yamino, and against his right eye, zro'o yavosh tivash, his hand, his arm, will dry up, v'ein yamino koho siche, and his right eye will become weak. Referring again to the destruction and the loss of Bar Kokhba. This perek is a difficult perek, as you heard as we were reading through. It's very difficult to keep a very clear thread through the perek as it kind of moves back and forth between the talking about the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, the splitting of the kingdom in the time of Rechavam and Yeravam ben Nevat, the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Torah after the second Beis HaMikdash, Bar Kokhba also after the second Beis HaMikdash. It seems very much like that. The main thrust of the perek seems to be that because of the sins, Hashem therefore caused various types of splits in Klal Yisrael over the years, which were never good and always resulted in bad things. So it seems like that is the connection, or at least that's some thread that you can follow through this perek. We are going to stop here. If anybody has questions, you can either unmute yourself or you can chat the question in. We will have one more shir, Emir Tzah Hashem, that will be not next week, but in 2 weeks' time. In 2 weeks, that would be on the 16th. That's when we'll have our next shir. Next week, we will not be having shir because the Kollel, we are having our annual networking event on Zoom. You should have gotten information about that via email. If not, we're happy to send you the information. So, Mirza Hashem, we will have another shir in 2 weeks' time on the 16th, and that will be our only, our second and last shir before Sukkot, and then we'll have to pick up again after Sukkot. Okay, everybody should have a great week.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.